From WSNC on the campus of Winston-Salem State University, I'm Byron Williams, and this is The Public Morality. Today, on The Public Morality, Wake Forest philosophy professor Christian Miller discusses his latest book, Honesty, The Philosophy and Psychology of a Neglected Virtue. That's coming up on The Public Morality. Welcome to The Public Morality. What is truth? What is honesty? In the world of social sciences and humanities, is it possible that we can possess a truth that is valid and be opposed by an equally valid contrarian perspective and both falling short of what may be deemed as the truth? This conundrum is further complicated when one considers that inaccurate statements could be an honest statement. In a time when honesty seems to be in short supply in our public discourse, Wake Forest philosophy professor Christian Miller grapples with the questions in his latest book, Honesty, The Philosophy and Psychology of a Neglected Virtue. We welcome him back to The Public Morality.
Professor Christian Miller, welcome back to The Public Morality. So good to be in conversation with you, sir.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me on your show again. I look forward to a conversation.
I want to begin with the question that's often attributed to Pontius Pilate. What is truth?
Yeah, so for me, this is a book about honesty, and honesty is definitely connected with truth, but they're not the same thing. So as a philosopher, I think of truth, I think, the way many my fellow colleagues think about truth, which is the way things really are, the facts as they really are. So the earth is round. That's a truth. Not because I believe it, but that's just the way the earth really is. The dinosaurs once lived on this planet Earth, not because I believe it, because that's the way things really are. And so if I believe something and it doesn't correspond to the way things really are, then I have a false belief. If I believe something and it does correspond to the way things really are, then I have a true belief because my belief captures the truth as to how things really are. Mm-hmm. Now, honesty gets into that. Maybe we can explore that later. But honesty,
you know, that was going to be my next question. I want you to extrapolate that from honesty. That was going to be my next question.
Great. Yeah. So honesty does something, I think, surprising here. Although when we unpack it a little bit more, maybe it's not going to be so surprising, because I think a lot of people would say honesty is a matter of the truth. And I want to say it's not the truth with a capital T, the way things really are. It's the truth as you see it, subjective. So it's a subjective truth. Let's make that a little bit more concrete. Thousands of years ago, if you ask someone, what is the shape of the earth? And they said, the earth is flat. They would not be telling the truth as far as how things actually are, but they would be telling you the truth as they see it, subjectively. And I think they're being honest in that case. I think it'd be crazy to say that they're being dishonest. That's how they really saw the world at the time. Today, it would be a different matter. And so let's take another example. Building on that, if today someone is a member of the Flat Earth Society, which there is really a Flat Earth Society, and actually an NBA player has flirted with being a member and this kind of thing. So that's interesting. But if someone is a genuine member of the Flat Earth Society today, and you ask them, what do you believe about the shape of the earth? And they told you, I believe the earth is flat. They're being honest. If they lie to you and they say, well, I don't want to get embarrassed in front of this crowd, so I'm going to say what everyone expects me to say, which is that the earth is round. They're being dishonest. Even though what they're saying is correct, the earth is round, they're not reporting accurately how they see the world. So they are being dishonest. So to sum it up, dishonesty and honesty, they track how we perceive the world, our subjective impressions and our subjective beliefs, not necessarily how the world or reality really is.
So is there an intentionality associated with honesty? Like if I truly believe the earth is flat, or and to use your example, or if I believe the earth is flat but I don't want to embarrass myself, then I say no, it's round. So does honesty have a contention an intentionality component is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so I think that's right. So we can unpack it, for example, with respect to lying. A standard way of thinking about lying is that you communicate something with which you take to be false with the intention of trying to get your audience to believe it's true. So we can switch examples. The stock education example, the child who tells the teacher, "My dog ate the homework." Which it turns out, I actually polled a room of about 300 teachers, and majority of them said they've got that excuse. So that's a real excuse. And so what's going on there? The child, of course, the dog didn't eat the homework. The child may not even have a dog, but they're telling something that they know to be false to the teacher with the intention of trying to get the teacher to believe that the dog, in fact, ate the homework. So yeah, I think intention plays a big role here. That's a case of lying. It'll play a role also in the reverse. If this the child says, honestly, I just didn't do it. I just ran out of time, or I was lazy. I want to play video games instead. They're intentionally choosing to represent to the teacher what actually happens, and that's intentional as well. So yes, my long-winded answer can be boiled down to one word, which is yes.
No. So earlier, when I asked you about what is truth, and you said the earth was flat, and then we got into how honesty is different from can be different from truth. So is honesty absolute? Is it an absolute honesty, or is it on a subject? Is it subjective?
I mean, there are larger issues here about morality and whether morality in general is absolute or objective. I like to use the word objective, or whether it's more subjective or culturally relative. But I take stands on those issues. I think objective morality perspective is the way to go. On the question of honesty, I think it's going to here. I think a couple of implications. One is that someone can think they're being honest and be mistaken. For example, you can deceive yourself. You can engage in self-deception and not even realize that you're deceiving yourself. And so you're being dishonest to yourself and not even realize it. And so you think you're being honest, but you're not. Someone can be more honest than another person. So honesty comes in degrees. When we say absolute, that makes it sound like it's either or, either you're honest or you're not, or it's black and white, or either like there's no gradation. I think there can be a spectrum where two people are both honest, but one's more honest than another. Also, two people can be dishonest and one's more dishonest than another. So there's a range as opposed to an absolutes in the sense of a binary here. With that in mind, it becomes really interesting to ask questions like, where am I on that range? How honest am I? And try to figure that out. And then that's relevant to thinking about how much do I have to grow to become more honest? How much more progress do I have to make? How much character development should I undertake to move myself along the spectrum of becoming more and more honest? But to boil it down, I think it's an objective matter whether someone's honest or not, but also keep in mind that it comes in degrees too.
I want to go because then you raise this in your text that in this conversation, obviously we could assume that the opposite of truth is a lie or the opposite of honest is dishonest, but you sort of nuance that a little bit, don't you?
I try to. I mean, I don't know if I succeed, but I try to. So I think when we go with honesty, we naturally think of telling the truth. And when we think of dishonesty, we na our mind naturally goes to lying. You know, we have the Pinocchio, for example, as one of our cultural icons. So I think, of course, they're related. Honesty has to do with truth telling, and dishonesty has to do with lying. But that is an overly narrow perspective. Honesty has to do with way more behavior that's morally relevant than just telling the truth. So to take several examples, honesty prevents misleading others, where you tell them the truth, but to try and get them to draw a false implication. So that's dishonest. Honesty prevents cheating. Honesty prevents stealing. Honesty prevents fraudulent promises, promise making, and even promise breaking. It also prevents fraud, too, for that matter. Hypocrisy, self-deception, bullshit. And we can unpack it, what any of these mean if you like, but the point being is that there's a lot of moral ground we're talking about here, and this one virtue, which I'm thinking of honesty from the through the lens of a virtue, a trait of character, is working against all of these forms of behavior and promoting their opposites, things like not cheating, not stealing, telling the truth, not misleading, and so forth. So it covers a lot of ground.
Is there a role for empathy? Does empathy influence this at all?
Yeah, empathy can, I think, influence it in a variety of ways. So, let me go to where my mind went first. Maybe not the most obvious way, but this is at least where I went. So empathy, I think of empathy as a matter of stepping out of my perspective, stepping into the perspective of another person, trying to see the world through their eyes, especially when they're going through pain and suffering and adversity, try to appreciate that, not what I would feel in their shoes, but what they're actually feeling in their shoes. So there are two ways I could see right off the bat this hooking up with honesty. One way is that it might be taken to justify lying. So if I'm empathizing with the kind of situation of another person and I know they're going through a tough time, I may not want to tell them a lie that will make their situation worse, increase their pain and suffering. I may want to shield the truth from them, at least for now, while they're going through the situation. You know, a classic example would be, someone who's been in a car accident and is recovering in the hospital, and they ask, you know, what happened to my child? And you know that the child has actually passed away, but you may withhold that information for now because it may not be the right time to deliver it when they're in a very fragile state themselves. Another example, more less dramatic example than that would be kind of white lie cases. Where, you know, do you tell the truth about how the outfit looks or the dessert tastes or how the artistic creation appears to you? Well, you empathize with what the other person is going, you may not think it's the right time. So that's one family of issues which we could explore in more detail. Another place where my mind goes when we think about empathy and honesty has to do with a discussion I have in one of my chapters of internet infidelity. It's I'm talking about in the heart of the book, I'm talking about situations where today it's easier to be dishonest than it was before. And one of the places where, you know, of course, infidelity's been around forever, but because of the internet, we have all these resources available to us if we, you know, so choose to engage in activities that go against what we might have promised to our significant other, our spouse or our wife, husband, whoever it might be. And one thing I really focus on at the end of that discussion is how can we push back against that temptation to go to the chat rooms, the temptation to go to websites like Ashley Madison, which promote infidelity. I say, think about the perspective of this person you care about. Empathize with their situation, step into their mind and ask yourself, how would they feel if they were to find out that you had been engaging in these activities? What would it do to them? What would be their emotional response? And presumably would be one of, you know, fill in the blank, horror, shock, disappointment, anger, frustration. sadness, grief. And then because of that, and because you still care for them, that can motivate you. Once you really appreciate that at an emotional level, that can motivate you to either stop doing that online stuff or not do it at all in the first place. So those are two connections I draw between empathy and honesty.
If we remove the subjectivity that you discussed earlier, does that automatically lead us to an absolute truth? What, when you take away subjectivity, what do we have?
So I don't think we have honesty anymore. But if it's a larger question of what happens in life without our subjectivity, I mean I do think there is such a thing as absolute truth. Again, I like the word objective truth. Objective truth I'm defining here as things that are true independent of whether we believe them or take them to be true. So it was true that the universe was created billions of years ago, even before there were human beings to even, be aware of that. So you take away our subjectivity, the objective truth remains. Now there are, I mean, here's a philosophy, like, maybe you might think a silly kind of philosophy move. You take away our subjectivity. Now there are no longer objective truths about our subjectivity. So if you want to go that way, because the objective truths include truths about us. Amongst the millions and millions of such truths, there are going to be truths about human beings, including our height and our weight and our age and a number of cells in our body, and truths about what our subjective life is like. Truths about what we're feeling and what we're experiencing, what we're remembering, and what we're believing. And if you take away that subjectivity, well, then those truths disappear. They no longer exist anymore. So that's maybe a little bit more subtle answer, but direct answer, objective truth remains, whether or not humans and their subjectivity are even on the scene. It doesn't depend upon us.
You sort of touched on this in your book. I wanted to have a little fun with it. And I'm going to talk about, truth, what I'm calling truth slash honesty and the magnitude of the issue is what I'm calling it. Like if I'm walking in front of a bank and I find $100 on the ground or in a bag, I, because of what $100 means to me, there's no threat to me. I will probably walk into the bank and say, "Hey, I just found this $100. Did someone lose it?" So let's say I'm walking across the same bank and I stumble into $5 million. That's a now I might think about that. I may not be quite as honest as I was with 100. I might rationalize my integrity in ways I wouldn't when the value was only $100. So I guess the magnitude of truth, honesty, and the issue is that something?
Yeah, that's a great example. I actually start th I'm people can't see me doing this, but I'm actually looking in the book because I start the book with an example very similar to that. A real world example of a 19-year-old who found outside of a bank, he found $135,000 in cash. And it was a matter of the ATM company accidentally having left some cash out, a lot of cash by accident. And then he came along and had that very situation thrust upon him. And what he decided to do was turn it in, as opposed to keeping it. He could have kept it, but he decided to turn it in. So now the general question is about the magnitude of honesty. And I think absolutely, that although there's a question, honest or not, and if you had kept the money, whether it was $5 or in that case, 135,000 or 5 million, if you kept it for yourself when it was clearly the bank's property, I think that would be dishonest. Just period. And then turning it in, on the flip side, is honest. There's no doubt that the significance of the honesty varies by a number of factors. One factor is the amount of money at stake. Another factor is your own personal situation. If you're a millionaire already, giving that $5 million back might not be a big deal. If you're, in very poor circumstances, giving that $5 million back is going to be, obviously changes things. That's a factor that matters. Another factor that matters might be whether you're going to get any recognition from being honest or not. So it's more significant if you do it anonymously, maybe in many cases, I don't know about every case, but if you do it anonymously, as opposed to no doing it when you know you're going to get celebrated and recognized and rewarded. So all that makes sense to me. That also factors into tricky questions of whether honesty can sometimes be outweighed, whether there are other values that will lead a person rightly to be dishonest. Because honesty might be in play, but it might not be super significant, whereas another value like compassion or empathy or caring might be more significant in the situation. And as a result, honesty gets outweighed.
It seems, in my view, if we're talking momentarily about the public discourse, which you and I both know has its own set of rules, but one side is governed by passion. The other side is governed by reason. And truth, honesty are somewhere floating around in the middle. How do the warring factions between passion and reason impact and/or influence the nature of honesty and truth?
Well, that is a interesting question. I've, in honesty, I've never gotten that question before. So I'm gonna think about it with you.
That's fine. That's fine.
I mean, here's one thing. I for me. Honesty is not just a matter of outward behavior. It matters what your heart is like. So what we can talk about passion and motivation and so forth. What emotion? What's going on behind the scenes when you perform an honest action? So there's going to be a conflict I think here between what a virtuous person would be like here. And what a less than virtuous person would be like. So let me expand on that. A virtuously honest person is someone who's going to behave outwardly as a result of reason, telling them this is the honest thing to do. The honest thing to do, due to their reason, is to return the money, is to tell the truth, is not to cheat on the test, it's not to BS the customer. Then there's the question, well, why do they do that? And sometimes, there can be a conflict between their heart and their behavior. But in a virtuously honest person, there's no conflict. They are wholehearted in being motivated and their passions are aligned with doing the action. In a less than virtuous person, you have motivational conflicts going on. So you might have the person still doing the honest action because reason tells them to do that, but a big part of them doesn't want to do it. It's painful to them. It's costly. It goes against their self-interest. So they're tempted not to do it. Let's take it down a level of abstraction. Let's make it a new example we haven't discussed today. The student who has an opportunity to cheat on the test. The virtuously honest student would not be tempted at all to cheat on the test, even though they know they can get away with it, not get caught, and improve their grade. That their emotions and their feelings are aligned with reason and telling them that they should not do that. The less than virtuous, although still behaving well, students would be conflicted. They would struggle. They end up not cheating, but they had to go through internal turmoil with their passions because they know that it would be in their self-interest to cheat so long as they could get away with it and they would get a better grade. So that's I think one answer at least. The virtuous person is wholehearted, reason and emotion, passion align. the what Aristotle would call the continent person. I was trying to avoid the jargon, but Aristotle called this person a person of strength of will or a continent person. They are not aligned. There's a conflict going on inside of them. Although reason ends up getting the upper hand, it's only after struggle. And so they fail to meet the standards of virtue.
I'm gonna, may I follow up?
Oh, you're in charge. You're the boss.
If that were only true, but thank you. In our, I'm going back to this public discourse because so much of our public discourse dictates who we are, dictates our notion of honesty, our notions of truth. So when I was reading your text, I was thinking these are the types of things I was thinking about. So these questions are your fault. I just want to just
Okay,
point out.
that's fine. I
All
take
right.
responsibility.
All right. But in the in this public discourse, do we want, in from your perspective, sir, do we want truth and honesty, or would we rather have our pre-existing notions affirmed regardless of the level of truth and honesty involved?
So I mean, it's, we could take this in a, my mind first goes in a political direction here. And so, you know, do we want our political values to be advanced at the expense of truth and honesty? Or do we want to side with truth and honesty, even if it doesn't advance our political aspirations?
That's pretty good. That's pretty close. That's a bit, yeah.
And then, so there are two sides to that question. There's an empirical question here, and then there's an ethical question here. So empirically, as a matter of fact, what do people do? You know, what do citizens in the U.S. do? What do politicians in the U.S. do? And then there's a normative question: well, what should they do, regardless of what they actually do? And you know, I'm no surprise on the normative question. I'm going to side with saying, look, don't give up on truth and honesty. They're extremely important values, unless we can make the case that something of greater worth is at stake. For example, unless we know that by being dishonest in a political matter, we could save many lives, or unless, you know, we need to withhold some military information before the attack is launched, because we need to keep that secret, you know, the target of the attack. So for the most part, I'm going to say on the normative question, though, truth and honesty should reign supreme. On the empirical question, what actually happens? Here, I think it's more discouraging. I mean, no surprise if anyone knows some of my earlier work on character and virtue. You know, I think we're a mixed bag, and I think we're a mixed bag here too. One thing I get into in the book, in this context, is people's willingness to share misinformation to advance their political goals. Even though they can recognize that it's misinformation. So it's not that they are duped or mistaken or are innocent here. It's they can recognize it's a political misinformation, and yet still be willing to share it anyway. In the chapter on politics, I actually look at a study which found that when you give participants this clearly false statement about immigration, only about 15% of them thought it was accurate, but greater than 50% of them said they might be willing to share it online. So how does this link back to your question? Well, it looks like truth and accuracy, as far as not what they see, because they see it's not accurate, but the truth and accuracy as far as what they're willing to share online and promote in the public space of social media, is being sacrificed for the sake of advancing their political cause. And that's discouraging, and obviously I don't endorse that.
It's almost a rationalization that I have this larger truth. So yes, this thing that the Christian Miller just told me, I know it's not true, but it conforms to my larger truth. So does that get us back to sort of the ends justifying the means?
Yes, So I can actually give you the example. So it was a study. This is a study pr published in 2021, where participants were given the following headline: over 500 migrant caravanners arrested with suicide vests. I mean, and this is supposed to be, in the U.S. And I mean, if, look, no surprise, 15% of participants thought that that was accurate. I mean, it may be surprising why 15% thought it was accurate. That's a little higher than I would have expected. But again, in the precise number was 51.1% said they would consider sharing it. Well, now to your question, it seems like, yeah, it's the ends justify the means. That's not an honest way of doing things. But if it advances certain kind of immigration policies that the person supports, then so much the worse for the truth if it gets me to where I want to go with my political values.
Is there, or no, what is the relationship in your view between truth, honesty, and virtue?
Yeah, good. So honesty, let's start with honesty first. Honesty could just be a matter of like a one honest action. Right now, I'm telling you that I was born in Maryland. And I'm being honest because that is where, in fact, I think I was born. So that's one honest action. But what I'm thinking of here is in the book is broader than that. It's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. It's being an honest person, having the virtue of honesty. So the virtue of honesty is going to include, of course, particular honest actions, but those had better be more than one, right? It can't just be one. And it better be in other contexts besides a radio interview. It had better be, across the board with respect to the office, the party, the classroom, the courtroom. It better be stable over time, day in and day out, week in and week out. It better be consistently honest in its behavior. So we're not going to have any cheating here, stealing here, lying here. And it better come from a place of virtue in your heart. So it better have virtuous motivation behind it. It can't be self-interested. It can't just be a matter of I don't want to get punished, or I'm trying to advance my position in the company, or I'm trying to get more followers on social media. It better come from a good place of virtue. Okay. So with that more rich picture of honesty in place as a virtuous character trait, then honesty is going to be side by side with the other virtues. So now to bring another one of your terms into the picture, virtue. We don't know exactly how many virtues there are. People have different lists, and they argue about which is the right list. One list is 24 long, and another seven, and so forth. But at least for the purposes of right now, honesty then gets established as one of the virtues on the list, side by side with other ones we generally accept, like humility, compassion, courage, patience, temperance, and the like. So it's one among many, and they can come into conflict, which raises interesting ethical dilemmas. Now, the last concept you had was truth again. So let's hook up virtue, honesty, and truth. So if we're, if we're talking about the maximally virtuous person, if there is such a thing, the supremely virtuous person, it comes in degrees. I already said that earlier. So, but we're talking about the supremely virtuous person. Then that person is going to be supremely honest. That's one of the virtues. And I think we should say right off the bat, they're going to be doing a great job with respect to subjective truth. We already have gone over that too. They're going to be communicating truth as they see it, very reliably, very dependably. That's subjective truth. However, I would hope that it's more than that. I would hope that the perfectly, if there is such a thing, a perfectly virtuous person would also be extremely reliable when it comes to objective truth as well. They're doing a good job of tracking that, but I don't think they're going to be flawless. I don't think, even a perfectly virtuous person is always going to get the truth right. For one reason, it's still a human being. And human beings are finite, limited creatures. There are some truths that human beings will just never grasp. We'll never know how many atoms there are in the universe, for example. We'll never know what it was like to walk amongst the dinosaurs. And then there'll be times, even with a perfectly virtuous person, where unintentionally, we had that conversation too, unintentionally, they'll make a mistake. They'll have a false belief. So they will not perfectly track the truth, but they will probably do a better job of tracking the truth than you and I do.
So let's go back to Berlin circa 1943. I am a German citizen. I not only knowingly hide Jews from the Nazis, but I openly lie about knowledge of what I'm doing. And with the intent to misdirect the Nazi regime. Can in that context or I mean that's probably the exaggeration the highest one. But the point I'm getting at is, can competing realities produce a different truth?
So the way I would put it is, there's only one truth, but competing virtues can come into play. So yeah, remember I'm working with that objective framework. There's only one truth, and that truth includes there's a Jewish family in the basement. The truth includes the Nazis are going to kill the Jewish family if they discover the Jewish family. The truth includes it's morally correct to defend the Jewish family. What happens, I mean, we bring honesty into the picture. If you just were focused on honesty in isolation, then you have to go with Immanuel Kant. Immanuel Kant, long before World War II, had this famous article where it was an axe murderer as opposed to a Nazi, but it was the same kind of setup. And he said, look, you are morally required to tell the truth to the axe murderer. And in parallel, you'll be morally required to tell the truth to the Nazi at the door who's asking where any Jews might be. And you have to say, yeah, there are some hiding in my basement. So that's the first, I think, first pass on what honesty requires. It requires you to tell the truth in that situation. I'll come back to question that in a minute. But now let's bring in another virtue. So I said it was honesty in isolation. Now let's bring in another virtue, though. Let's bring in compassion. Compassion is a really important virtue too. It seems in isolation to lead you to do whatever you can as the homeowner to protect the Jewish family, even if that means lying to someone who's looking to capture them. And so then we get a situation of conflicting virtues. Honesty leads to telling the truth. Compassion looks like it would lead to lying about the whereabouts of the Jewish family. There's a conflict. It's by itself irresolvable. If you just had those two and I, conflicting each other, what do you do? You're stuck. You have to then ask the question of which one's more significant, which one's more important in this situation. And, there's some disagreement about that in the history of philosophy. It's strikingly, Augustine would seem to side with honesty. Kant would seem to side with honesty. A few people today would as well. But overwhelmingly, if you ask people today, including my students, it's like 100% across the board, they would say that compassion gets the upper hand. That the right thing to do in a situation is to outright lie to the Nazi at the door, despite it being dishonest, because thereby you can protect innocent lives, and that's more important. So you get the implication that in certain situations, dishonesty is morally required. That's how I also think about it. That's the framework I adopt. There are some interesting, if this is of worth noting, there are some interesting subtleties though to it. There are ways in which people try to actually say that uttering the expression, I don't know where any Jews are, to the Nazi, would not be dishonest. And so I think some of these are kind of maybe ambitious attempts, but I'll give you two examples. One is to say, well, when you utter that expression, you're actually telling the truth to the Nazi because you're using Jew in the sense that the Nazi uses Jew, as someone who has no moral worth, is an animal, is worthless, no dignity, trash, whatever associations the Nazi had. And so when the Nazi says, "Do you know where any Jews are?" understood that way, and you answer, "I don't know where any Jews are," understood that way, you're actually telling the truth. You don't know where any Jews are, understood as animals. You do know where some people are who have worth and dignity and value. They're in your basement, but you don't know where any Jews are as the Nazi understands it. So that's a kind of clever, maybe trick to try and say you could still be honest in that situation. And then last thing, I'll stop. Some people also try to make the move that you made a promise to the family in the basement, and so by because of that promise, either explicitly made a promise or implicitly made a promise to protect them. If you lie to the Nazi at the door, you're still upholding honesty because you're still keeping your promise to that Jewish family. So those kind of clever moves make it turn out that it's honest to lie to the Nazi at the door. And so we don't have a conflict anymore between honesty and compassion. And everything aligns in the in direction of protecting the Jewish family in the basement.
What do you mean by a post-truth world?
I don't use that expression very much myself, but here's one thing I there there one reason I don't use it very much is because I think it's multiply ambiguous and it can be confusing because we can mean all kinds of different things. So here's one thing we can mean: we don't care about objective truth anymore. That's a post-truth world. We only care about relative truth. We are all the ones who invent truths for ourselves, and there's nothing more objective than that. Another thing we can mean by post-truth world is a world in which honesty has been discarded or no longer valued anymore. So it would be, a matter of honesty and dishonesty. And so now dishonesty is rampant. But a third thing we could mean in addition to this is a world in which we no longer care about the truth. We only care about what's in our self-interest. And so this would be a tie us to the issue we haven't even explored at all, which is bullshit. So a bullshit or a BSer is someone who communicates to others with no regard for the truth. They may say some things that are true. They may say some things that are false, but they don't care about whether what they say is true or false. They care about whether it advances their interests. And so its truth is discarded, it's post-truth, because it's not something they value or care about. So there are three different things we can mean. Post-truth as in a world of BS, post-truth as in a world of dishonesty, and post-truth as in a world where objective truth has been discarded. Because of those different meanings, I would like to maybe come up with a different expression that's more clear and clean and single meaning. But if you had to pin me down, so I guess that was all waffling, not answering your question. If you had to pin me down on one meaning of what does a post-truth world look like, I would say it would be a world in which we no longer care about objective truth. And we truth has become something in the eye of the beholder. Like people talk about beauty in the eye of the beholder. That would be a world in which truth now is in the eye of the beholder.
So much of American culture has been dominated by propaganda. And which is to be, I'm going to be generous when I just say, and I'm defining propaganda as a one-sided attempt to sway people to my truth. That's how I'm using the term. And I'm thinking that goes all the way back to Paul Revere's etchings on the Boston Massacre, which sort of he painted a story that really wasn't accurate to what actually happened. Is propaganda the antithesis of truth and honesty as you articulated in your text?
Not necessarily. So once I attempt to sway people to my side, I mean, understood quite broadly, you might say that encompasses things like debate and argumentation, and rational discourse, and apologetics, and lots of these different pursuits, which need not be dishonest. I guess a lot will depend upon what that one-sided means. But persuading, the activity of trying to persuade someone to my side, that in and of itself, I think is unobjectionable, intrinsically unobjectionable. It can be done well, it can be done badly, it can be done honestly, it could be done dishonestly. The one-sided, though, makes me pause. So if the one-sided means I'm gonna lay out my case and I'm gonna give you a lot of arguments for my view, I don't think that has to be objectionable either. We do that all the time. If though, here's what it now I think it starts to get problematic. If one-sided means I'm going to lay out my case in a way that is very dismissive or intellectually dishonest towards the other side, it presents the other side as making lots of fallacious moves and obvious mistakes or having a very simplistic position that's easy to knock down. And then that's what I'm engaged. My side looks very robust, very sophisticated, very, argumentatively defendable, and with lots of evidence. The other side is portrayed by me in this kind of caricature, crude, simplistic way. Then yes, now we've gotten into some problematic territory. This I would think of as an intellectually dishonest enterprise. I think when we're engaging in rational discussion, and especially argumentation with someone from the other side, we should want to portray their position as charitably as possible and as in a sophisticated manner as possible, even if we're ultimately trying to knock it down to, to give reasons for why it's not correct. We should be respectful towards it and treat it in what I would call an intellectually honest way, as opposed to an intellectually dishonest way. And if that's what one-sided means, yeah, then that's problematic.
I'm gonna in the few seconds we have, a few minutes we have left, I want to shift all together because we've had you on. This is the third time we've been in conversation, and your previous book as well as this one, you did not write this book particularly so that a few philosophy professors across the country were debated. You wrote this for a larger audience. Would you say more about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm someone who's been in the academic world for over 20 years now. I've done the academic game. Maybe that's a negative term, but I've done the academic thing for a long time, where I've written journal articles, I've written academic books. I care about them. I think they're important, but they are not read by anyone. I could pour myself into an academic book for an entire year, really work hard, all the details and the minutiae, publish it with the top press in my field, and have it sell 300 copies years down the road. That to me is just really discouraging, and something I did not want to continue doing for the rest of my career. So I decided to pivot and at least give it a shot to see if I could write something that was more accessible, maybe more engaging, more examples, less jargon, less terminology, and have it still talk about really important things, things that I care about. I think people in general care about things like character, virtue, what is it to be a good person? How can we become better people? In this case, honesty, how honesty is under attack today. all those issues, but make it such that my mother could read it. My neighbor could read it. And not just read it, but hopefully benefit from it. Hopefully, they would see something of value here that they could take with them after they had finished reading the book. So I started this pivot with a book called The Character Gap, which we last spoke of. And I had such a good experience with that. I really enjoyed writing it. I really enjoyed talking about it. It got a good reception afterwards when it came out that I thought, why would I go back to the academic thing, which just gathers dust in library shelves, when there's an opportunity to actually have an audience who can engage with these ideas and who hopefully can benefit from them. So I'm on that path now with the second book, The Honesty Crisis, and I expect I will keep doing this for the rest of my career.
Well, I can say, having read an advanced copy, that I, for one, enjoyed it. I found it very accessible. So, if I'm any barometer, you certainly met your goal with me.
Thank
Also,
you.
as it turns out, this conversation is airing on the day that the book will be released. So, obviously, you can always go to your online. Is there a website they can go to as well to purchase the book?
Sure, great. So just for my work in general, I would send people to christianbmiller.com. That's my full name, Christian B. Miller, all one word, .com. Google will get you where you need to go anyway. So I would just say Google The Honesty Crisis is the title of the book. Amazon will pop up right away, or Oxford University Press, their website will pop up right away, and you can go from there. So that I didn't actually know that about the release date on this episode. That's really, really cool.
Professor Christian Miller, Wake Forest University, my friend, thank you so much for once again joining me on the Public Morality. I really enjoyed this robust conversation.
Always a blast. Thank you for having me, and maybe we can do it again down the road.
The Public Morality welcomes your comments. You can contact me at byron@publicmorality.org. That's Byron, BYRON, at publicmorality.org. You can follow me on Facebook as well as Twitter. The archive broadcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Prime, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Those listening to the Public Morality on WSNC can also listen on its app. Using your mobile device, simply go to your application page, search WSNC 90.5, and click open to listen from anywhere. The Public Morality is produced at WSNC on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. For all of us at the Public Morality, I'm Byron Williams.